The interview is taking place in Clemson, South Carolina, at the home of the interviewee on August 31, 1988. The interviewer is Doji Meganson. What is your name?
Frances Holly Smith.
May I ask your age?
83.
When did you first come to this area?
1927.
What brought you to this part of South Carolina?
I married Bob Smith.
Well, what brought you up here to meet him?
Oh, I see. I was teaching school at Westminster. I taught school at Westminster, and that's how I met him.
Where were you originally from?
I was from Silverton, South Carolina, but it is not known as Silverton now. It is known as Jackson, South Carolina now. It's in Aiken County.
And where did you go to school?
I went to school in the very first years, I went to school in a little schoolhouse that my father built on the place where we lived. He was a farmer. And the county furnished the teacher, and he furnished a room and board for the teacher, and all the children around that community went there. And then after that...
Excuse me, was that just a small one-room school, I guess?
Just one-room school, and, one of those Betty Pot stoves, you know.
About how many students?
Oh, about 10 or 15, something like that.
For all the grades all together?
Yeah. Uh-huh. There would be just one or two in a grade. My oldest sister was in the highest grade. I don't remember what that was. And when I went there. And then my family moved to Ellington, South Carolina, where we could enter a graded school, you know. And there I entered the fourth grade and finished the ninth grade. Then my family moved back to the farm, and the school that was at this place, I tried out for it, and they would take me because I went to school there about 2 weeks. And they said that I needed to go to a place where I could get in a higher grade. I think that took you, I don't know what grade it took you through. So then I went to Dunbarton, South Carolina, and finished the 10th grade. Then, in the meantime, my family moved to Augusta. And then I went to Tubman School for Girls in Augusta. And then I stood the state examination for teachers, and I got a school at Westminster, and I taught over there 2 years. And I studied music at Anderson College.
And at Westminster, you said you met your husband-to-be?
Yeah, well, there was a squit, this thing I know. I went to a square dance, and I don't remember how I got to the square dance, but I met Johnny Pike, and of course I had a roommate, Annie Lee, and Johnny had a date with me, and I don't remember how I got the date with Johnny. And so he said, now I'll bring along another boy for your roommate. So he brought Bob along, and that's how I met him. So I never did date Johnny anymore, and the rest of the time I dated Bob.
Well, during the rest of your life, you must have run into John Pike around town. Did he continue to speak to you?
Oh, yeah. He married a girl from Pickens. And he and his girl and Bob and I got married about the same time, and we went on our honeymoon, and we met up in Highlands, North Carolina, in a place called Horse Cove Valley. And it was down in a cove and these mountains all around it. And there were real mountain people that we stayed with. But it was fun and interesting. We enjoyed it. And then never came on back down. And Bob and I lived in Mrs. Wirtz's house, who was a friend of the Smith family, and her husband had died. So we lived there, and we kept the house, and she boarded with us. And we stayed there.
Excuse me, where was that?
It was right here in Clemson on Sloan Street.
Mm-hmm.
It's right up there, right close to the Baptist Church. And after that, we moved to an apartment with Mr. Chambers. And that house is right across the hill. It's a big, great house, and we had the upstairs apartment.
Do you by any chance remember what you paid for rent back then?
Well, I have no idea. Now, with Mrs. Wirtz, we didn't pay rent. She just ate with us, and that just took care of it, and I took care of the house.
So you, in essence, swapped out housekeeping and cooking duties and
providing
the food.
Yes, that's right. And so after that, we just decided we just have to have a place of our own. We didn't care how small or how little it was. And we had a pretty hard time getting somebody to back it or furnish the money. We had enough. We owned the lot. I had gotten some money from some land I had down around Augusta. And so I bought this lot, and we had the lot, and Bob had, I think he had about $700. Now that was a lot of money back then. And so we had the lot and the $700, and the Piedmont Lumber Company in Greenville built it for us, and I've been here ever since.
Much of the land in the area where you are had been owned by the Fort Hill Land Company.
That's right.
And you purchased it from them?
No, John Smith owned this lot.
Your
and he told
brother-in-law?
Bob, huh?
Your brother-in-law?
Yeah. And he had told Bob, said, now, when you get married, I'm going to give you that lot. So he didn't give it to us. We paid for it, but of course we didn't pay as much as it probably could have brought. But we paid for it.
Do you remember when you moved in?
In this house.
Into this house.
1936.
And so you were here about 10 years before you settled in this particular house.
That's right.
And the address is 226 North Clemson.
Mm-hmm. At one time it was 136 North Clemson, but the town, you know, has grown and that changes.
I assume when you moved here you had pretty much complete facilities, indoor bathroom, electricity, running water, telephone. The area of Clemson where you live has a nickname. What is it called?
I can't think of it.
Are you all the way into Chiggerville?
This is Chiggerville proper right here.
How did it get such an inelegant name?
Now that I don't know. I really don't know. I guess it's just full of chiggers. Because, you know, it was just a wilderness when we built that. And that house was built 2 years before this one, Mrs. Whitten's house.
And how many others were there in your immediate neighborhood?
And this house was here, and it was that house was old. It's been done over, you can't tell. And the house across the street was here, and that's it.
So you were nearly in the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
You arrived here, I gather, when in 1927 for the first time.
Yeah.
What were your impressions of First Calhoun?
Of Calhoun?
Yes.
Oh, really? I didn't think too much about it. Oh.
You didn't think too much of it, or you didn't think much about it?
I just didn't think much about it, you know. I just don't remember.
Did anything particular strike you about it?
No, I can remember the magnolia trees in front of Mrs. Smith's house because that's the first thing I saw when I got over there was the magnolia trees, and I remember they were blooming. And when Baba went over there to see her, she said, now, go pull you some magnolias. And, you know, she always gave you magnolias. And that's my first impression of that house, is those magnolia trees. I met Mrs. Smith before we were married. And he drove me by there one day and says, I want you to meet my mother. And, because I was thinking more about her than I was Carolyn. And I thought, well, what a friendly person she is. And that's all I can remember, you know, about it.
It sounds like a rather casual introduction to the family.
Yeah. And Miss Smith didn't know I was coming, you know. That's the way Bob was. Everything he did, it was a surprise. And so he went in the house and got his mother, and Miss Smith, she came out in a hurry, you know. And Bob says, well, I want you to meet somebody. And so then I met her. And we stayed a few minutes, didn't get out of the car, and then I don't know where we went from there. I guess I went back to my boarding house place.
Did you have any other contacts with her before you got married?
No, I didn't.
So you were virtually unknown to the family and vice versa.
I knew Ethel. I came over to some of the football games with Bob, and I would stay with Ethel before and after the games, you know, and had supper with her several times before we were married.
And that's Bob's sister, mm-hmm, Ethel Elmore.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
What about your impressions of Clemson?
Well, when I first came here and started living here, I didn't like it a little bit. And I thought I didn't see how in the world I could stand it. It was so different from what I'd been used to, college town, because I was brought up and raised in the country, and then my people moved to Augusta, and I lived in Augusta during two summers. And because it was a city, a town, and so different from here. And Ethel, she sort of took me in hand and got me introduced to all the things that the ladies joined, the book clubs and all the different clubs. And finally I began to fit in.
Would you talk a little bit more in detail about the different types of clubs and organizations you found in town when you got here?
Let's see. Well, the Baptists, they had the Woman's Missionary Society. Well, if you were a Baptist, you had to join that. And I remember the first meeting I went to was at Miss Sue Earle's home, and she had just gotten a new red carpet for the floor. And at that meeting, before the meeting, she asked me to do a paper on Moses. Oh, I worked very hard and all that. And I got that paper up. And then when I got there, I had to play the hymns. And all that, I was just so nervous I could not stand it. But I lived through it and managed to get by with it.
Was that sort of an initiation rite?
I guess it was, because that was the first time I'd been to that club. And then they had a literary club. I don't remember too much about that one. And then the UDCs. I joined the UDCs. I had had my mother had gotten the papers up for UDCs, because she herself was a member, and she had gotten the papers up for the rest of us, and I didn't have any trouble getting that done, and so I joined that and stayed a member of the UDCs a good while. I don't remember how long, but when teaching piano, I had a good many pupils. I had as many as 45 at one time, in one period, and I could not go to these things and have pupils too, you see, because they met in the afternoon and the pupils came in the afternoon, and you couldn't just take off from music lesson for that.
Well, at that time, I gather that when you joined the UDC, the women in the UDC were very much interested in the Calhoun Mansion.
Yeah, that was their main project, main thing, was the mansion.
Was that the period when they were trying to restore it?
Yeah, and they did lots of things, little things to make money for it. I remember once we had to dress up in costumes of that age. I don't know what we did. We did something up at the mansion, and I remember standing around with these costumes on, people looking at you. It was nice.
Who was head of the UDC here at that time?
At that time, I think Mrs. Clue. Mrs. Clue, yes, I would think so.
Well, you've mentioned, among others, the UDC, the Literary Club, and the Baptist Women's Missionary Association. Were there others in town you knew about but didn't join?
Well, I did join the book club. And finally, I got too many clubs, and as I said, I had to drop out of them because of the music. I was a member of the book club, and I don't know how this came about, but at the end of 12 months, they had books, and each member would get a book, and I got a book on child psychology. I know I still got the book. That's about all I can remember about that.
What types of ladies belonged to these societies? Were they primarily college-related people, townspeople, mixture?
Well, most of them were college-related people, you see, wives of the professors. Because I wasn't, and there were a few that wasn't, you know, that lived in town. But I'd say most of them had a connection with the college. At that time, it was the college. It wasn't the university.
Did the college faculty wives tend to form something of a separate clique distinct from the townspeople?
Well, I suspect that they did.
But apparently you didn't feel it very much at the time.
No. Well, I most always went to the club with Ethel, and because her husband Jack was treasurer or secretary of the college, and I just went along with them, and I was just taken, you know, right in like that. Well, now, you would hear every now and then, you'd say, her husband is a professor of mathematics, you know, little slighty things like that. But I never did feel it myself.
One of the things I know you enjoy very much and have done well at is sewing. Were there sewing clubs?
There was a sewing club, but I was never a member. I like my tatting. Because I learned to tat when I was about 8 years old. My mother sent us, we were living in the country in this place in Silverton, and she had a brother up there, and every summer we would go for a 2 week visit. And this aunt, she would have us to get a bath, and they had a tub, you know, but we didn't have a tub in the country. And we enjoyed getting a bath every afternoon in the tub. And she'd have us to go sit out on the front porch. And she gave me this bobbin with thread on it and showed me how to make the stitch and said, "Now you just sit right here till you learn to make that stitch and make it slip. It has to slip." So that's how I learned. And then if you learn that one stitch, from then on you can do anything. But then I never did tat anymore until until after my husband died, because it was always busy, you know, going to school, teaching. And so after my husband died and my class got smaller, I started to tatting, and my old sister is, she's probably called a professional at it, and she helped me, and so I learned to do a right good deal. She says, I am an advanced tatter now.
Congratulations. One of the things that you and I did a couple of weeks or so ago was to go over to the Calhoun Mansion, since we were talking about that, and we looked at some lace that your mother-in-law had made. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I don't remember too much about it, except seeing Mrs. Smith sit on her porch over in Calhoun and just tatting away as fast as she could and talking at the same time. And I guess she never missed a stitch. I don't know about that.
When was that?
Oh, I couldn't begin to tell you when that was.
What was she making?
She was making knitting and edging for the curtains in, I think it was Clemson room at the college.
Are those curtains still in use today?
No, they're not in use today. The knitting has been replaced and copied, but it was not copied from Mrs. Smith's, but it happens to be all the same design.
Apparently your mother-in-law, Mrs. Smith, copied it fairly accurately from what Mrs. Calhoun had originally
done approximately
100 years before.
Yeah.
You've mentioned your music teaching. How about talking about that for a few moments?
Well, my first pupil up here was Elsie. Bob's niece. And I charged 25 cents a lesson. And then, by word of mouth, I got some more pupils. And it just kept growing like that, you see. And I worked very hard at it. I loved it. And I worked very hard at it, and I think I did fairly well with it.
Did you start music lessons soon after you moved to Clemson, or was it after you got a house of your own, or sometime in between?
It was while we were living in the Chambers apartment, and the students had to come upstairs. And I remember them having to bring, I bought a second-handed piano, and I remember them bringing the piano up. They had a very hard time getting the piano up. It was old and very, very heavy. And so that was one reason why we decided we just had to get another place, because I was getting more and more pupils and I had to have a place. And I think probably the students annoyed Mrs. Chambers.
Were you able to buy the piano from someone, or did it come from a store?
I bought it from a friend of Ethel's, Mrs. Shiva. I paid $50 for it. And then, after that, there was a contest in the Greenville News about words. I remember you had to look them up in the dictionary. I don't even remember exactly what it was. And I worked on that. And I won a piano. And it was a good piano. What was the name of that? A Steinway. It was a Steinway upright. Not a Steinway that way. It was a Steinway. It was an old one, but a Steinway upright. But it had a beautiful tone. And I loved it. And I had this man from Spartanburg to tune it. And evidently, he was a beginner tuner or something, and he absolutely ruined it. And the key is stuck. Never did get him fixed up. And I didn't know anybody to get to straighten it. So then I traded it What did I do with that piano? I don't know. I must have traded it on another one.
How long have you taught music?
Well, when I was a little girl, about 10 or 12 years old, my neighbor had a little girl and she wanted to learn to play the piano. So, see, I took piano lessons from my mother and about 6 or 7 years old, I had learned to play a little bit and know a little bit about it. So I taught her. Now that was my very first teaching experience. And I don't think she paid me anything, but I was delighted to teach her. And then when I was teaching at Westminster, I had several pupils over there that I taught.
And how long have you taught in Clemson?
Let's see, I didn't start with them since they were moved over there. That was about 1931 or 32.
So coming mighty close to 60 years.
That's right.
Have any idea how many students you've taught in that period of time?
No, I wish I did, and I wish I had kept the names of all of them. I have few of the record books, but I didn't keep them all, and so I have no idea.
Surely hundreds by this time.
Well, I taught a lot of them. That's what I said. I taught everybody in the community at one time, you see. Well, there wasn't too many teachers, I guess. And Ms. Freeman taught. And Ms. Freeman, she would call me up every so often and wanted to know, how many pupils you have? And what are you doing with them? And I think it was just curiosity. Mm-hmm. Now, I never called her and asked her about her pupils, but she really didn't just do that. And she was a friend of Bob's, and I told Bob I just didn't like it a little bit. And so he thought I was not being very nice about it, but I didn't think she should have been so inquisitive.
When you were talking about your teacher with the tatting, it reminded me of your music teaching. I bet you were just as much of a perfectionist with your students as she was with your tatting.
Well, I tried. You know, after we moved into this house, I went to Anson and took lessons from this teacher down there that I knew was a great teacher. Because I wanted to know exactly what to do and what to do about teaching. And her name was Miss Grace Cronkite. And she was an old person. And she had taught at some university but had got too old to handle the situation at the university. So she came to this small college. And Walter Cronkite is her nephew, and that's who she was. She was a very, very strict person, and she didn't mind insulting you a bit, but she really knew her stuff. She knew how to teach.
Well, you've also spent a lot of your years in Clemson playing the organ, haven't you?
Yeah. I was up at the Episcopal Church for, I don't know exactly whether it was 15 or 17 years.
So when did you start that, in the 1950s, 60s?
1945. 1945. You see, I started, Mr. Gribbin was pastor after Mr. Goodman came, Mr. Oliveris. After Mr. Oliveris was Mr. James. After Mr. James was Mr. Arrington. Now, this Arrington is different from the one at the Baptist Church. And after Mr. Arrington was Davis. And I was thinking about it just today, and I think it was 17 years.
Quite a long time, and I'm sure you've played for many additional weddings and funerals.
I've played for weddings and funerals.
So musically, you've been involved with the whole community almost.
Well, I guess you would say that. The biggest wedding I ever played for was Walter Cox's son. Walter Cox was interim president for a while. And I did that at the Baptist Church. Now that was a pipe organ. And of course, at the Episcopal Church, they had a Hammond organ. So I practiced for that wedding 3 months, every morning, every weekday morning, about 2 hours. I had to go down there. See, I had to learn the organ, you know, how to use it. And I really enjoyed that. And that was the best I have ever done a wedding.
Well, good.
And the church was full of people, and for some reason, I was not the least bit nervous.
One of the other organizations that you've been involved with that you didn't mention earlier, partly because it came, I think, somewhat later in your life at Clemson, was the Eastern Seminary.